If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
With Sailor in the Sea from Midnight North's forthcoming record, There Is Always a Story, due out July 23rd on Americana Vibes Records. Like you, we've been following the Midnight North story for a while now. For the uninitiated, though, they are a roots rock Americana quartet out of the Bay Area. While there have been personnel changes over the years, the constants have been Graham Lesh, Elliot Pack, and Connor O'Sullivan, who have been joined more recently by Nathan Graham. I purposely didn't mention what each member contributes to the fabric of the band because they all play a part in vocals and instrumentation, besides their main instrument. This is a band with very talented musicians who bring a ton to bear, both on recordings and in a live setting. Their work ethic has likely been passed down from Lesh's famous father, bass player Phil Lesh, a founding member of the Grateful Dead. On their forthcoming album, There's Always a Story, due out July 23rd on Americana Vibes, the quartet's individual prowess as musicians combines to make probably their best record to date. There's an ebb and flow to the 10 tracks between straight-ahead country-twinged Americana to more R&B and soul-laden funk tunes. What is consistent throughout the experience is the band's commitment to strong songwriting, musicianship, and their signature harmonies. I caught up with Graham and Connor fresh off the band's spring tour to talk about the record. The conversation started when Graham suggested the addition of Nathan was a great boon for the band.
Yeah, I mean, just having Nathan is such a big step for us. It was really, I believe when last we spoke, he had just sort of joined the band and was doing East Coast stuff, but having him full time and, you know, turns out he sings, turns out he plays banjo, all that stuff. It's been really, really great.
There's Always a Story represents, I guess, a new chapter for the band. 10 stories told through song, and it's probably your most polished album to date. Would you say that's accurate?
Absolutely. I mean, we worked with the same producer, David Simon Baker, for Under the Lights. But looking back, we tracked that record with, at a couple different locations, just because of what we were doing at the time in 2017, and a couple different drummers, I think. We had our original drummer on like one track, and then Coford on the rest. And then this record was all recorded, I mean, aside from some pandemic home recording, was recorded in one studio in Marin. And
just like 1 week.
Yeah, very. And the four of us, you know, Elliot, Graham, me, and Nathan, throughout the process. So it was not as disjointed. I mean, Under the Lights wasn't that disjointed, but comparing it to this one, it is because this one's just like a little bit more solid. I think we demoed things out a little bit more for There's Always a Story. And as far as recording, it was just kind of, aside from the pandemic challenges, which we got around, it was just a kind of more cohesive process creatively and technically.
Yeah, and just the second time working with a producer like Dave, he knows us a little better, we know him a little better. Just that second project with someone like that, I think really helped. Yeah, I mean, like Connor said, with Under the Lights, like we wouldn't demo things, we would play them live, like constantly. And then when we'd have like two or three songs that we played live 10, 20 times, then we'd like find a weekend and track those songs kind of. With this, we sort of went in without having played a lot of these songs live at all, and maybe having the songs be 90% done and demoed a little bit, but then we'd go into the studio and finish them. And Elliot and Nathan and I, actually all of us, we'd tweak lyrics, we'd tweak a word here or there, we'd
arrangements and even feels.
Yeah, we'd cut a bridge, we'd add a part. Yep, we'd totally change all kinds of stuff in the studio just to sort of be together and work through it, instead of just like tracking this thing that we've played live and sort of like knew how to execute. It was a little more creative.
Would you say that all of your chops are much stronger in terms of the instruments you play and probably even the harmonies in your vocals? Is that maturity? Is that experience? Is that wider ears listening to other stuff? What the sound, like I said, it's a lot more lush, and I understand that has a lot to do with production, but even your playing, Graham in specific, your playing is a lot more mature than it has been on past records.
Well, thank you. I think that at least when it comes to lead guitar for me on this record, that was one of the very few benefits of the pandemic and the delays that the pandemic introduced. We kind of tracked all the basic stuff, and you know, we were probably like 90% done with the tracking when March 2020 rolled around, but then, you know, I kind of had some time to sit and listen and just work up parts. I don't know. I've never been quite as good at going into the studio and like having to nail a lead guitar part that hasn't sort of been pre-written. So having just the ability to just bang just work on, you know, one solo section for hours at a time, just in GarageBand by myself, and then go and execute, I think was really helpful for me personally. But I think that's more of a studio execution thing than it is. I mean, I hopefully we're getting better all the time, but for me, that's what made me feel more comfortable with things. It was more the execution.
Yeah, I specifically noticed that on some of the solos, and we'll get into some of that in a sec, because I've gone through the record several times. As you know, Graham, I've had it for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's gotten lots of listens. So why don't we, can we go through some of the songs? But before we do that, there are lots of guests. I know that you're all multi-instrumentalists, but none of you play horns to my...
No, that's no. The, that's, I hit up, my friend Jen, our friend Jen Hartswick.
Yes.
Who plays with everyone, but most famously with Trey's band. And she got Natalie Cressman and James Casey, also from the Trey Anastasio band. And, you know, all of whom we've crossed paths with at some point. Elliot and I did the IGE trips to Europe with Natalie and James, and Jen, we know through Jake, right, Connor? I think something like that.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the first time might have been Alabama. That's when I first hung out with her, was in Mobile.
Yeah. Speaking of the Giants, one of our mutual friends, Jake Peavy, with Jen. That was, I mean, there's a ton of guests, like you said, but the horns, that's who we were able to call. And Jen wrote up an amazing arrangement for Earthquakes, and yeah.
James Casey is like really part of the family now that he's in. It seems like he's a full-time member now of Billy and the Kids, and he's done an amazing job. Oh my God.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, he's a monster. He's also, you know, good friends with our buddy Eric Krasno. And
right.
There's all these connections with all these people, and we were so lucky with all these guests to be able to just sort of like call up someone, and we knew everyone was just sitting at home during the pandemic, no right. shows to play. And everyone had their recording set up and their, you know, their live streaming set up, and those are pretty closely related, so everyone could, you know, track stuff, and was really excited to sort of have a gig and have some work. So yeah, that was another one of those small benefits for us, where we were able to get all of these good friends to work their magic on our songs.
Right. Okay. So if you don't mind, let's dive into the songs. And I have notes on all of them, but I'm not sure we'll get to all of them. But, you know, Wild Card is Midnight North, or what is typical of the Midnight North sound previous to this record, I'd say. Would you agree with that? I mean, it's a fairly Americana, folksy kind of tune.
I would agree with it, but to me, it's very different than anything we've ever done, especially performing it live. You know, we typically do not have long sections without drums, you know, and we typically wouldn't have Graham or Elliot strumming an acoustic guitar for 2 minutes and singing without much else. So in that sense, to me, it's a departure arrangement wise. And getting back to kind of what you were asking about maturity, or what makes this record different, or what happened. And in my opinion, I feel like, you know, we have the confidence now to do something like that arrangement wise, where we kind of like strip it down. And I think with the way we have this band now as a four piece at, in the core, you know, we were able to kind of take a step forward and do things like that on this record. And then the kind of the interesting thing, getting back to Under the Lights, that I thought about, you know, those songs were recorded live. So it was kind of a five piece band just going at it for the whole Under the Lights record. Now this record, it's a little more stripped down. We kind of were able to, you know, use the banjo a little bit more that Nathan had. And then these kind of acoustic arrangements on songs like Wildcard or Coyote, which I just don't think we could have done before. But now it's kind of flipped that we recorded those first in that way. And then now we're trying to figure out how to play them live, you know, and it's still very stripped down live. And I don't think we would have ever done that before. So to me, Wildcard and Coyote and even Silent Lonely Drifter, excuse me, are kind of a step forward where it's a little more stripped down and, you know, it's working live. Like we've already played, you know, 20 some more shows this spring and summer with those songs, but it's almost reverse approach to Under the Lights in kind of an interesting way.
I think Coyote is one of the best songs you guys have ever written.
Yeah. Thank you. I think we think so too.
I could easily see you guys performing this at the Grand Ole Opry or any concert hall anywhere. I mean, it's great.
Yeah. Thank you. And, you know, getting back to Wildcard and what Connor said, a lot of this I think comes from like the, like he said, the confidence to have all of these different, you know, the sounds and the just being able to be more dynamic, like throughout the course of a song, throughout the course of a full album. And just, you know, if it works for the composition and for the recording, like, let's do it. It doesn't matter if it's not, you know, a rocker or, you know, we'll figure out how to make it work live later. And, you know, especially now, audiences are just willing to go with us. They're just so excited to see live music. And if the songs are good and the performances are good, doesn't matter if we're in a crowded bar, they're going to listen to us sing something soft, you know? And that's been really cool to see, you know, now that we've gotten back on the road and played songs like Wildcard. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, Connor mentioned Wildcard and Silent Lonely Drifter and Coyote. Those are songs that Nathan has put a big imprint on. So, you know, he wrote most of Wildcard. He wrote all of Silent Lonely Drifter, and his banjo part on Coyote was definitely something that Elliot, you know, latched onto once she first sent us her demo.
I think it's having a drummer that can do other things. Like we don't feel bad that he's not kicking, you know, doing kick, snare, hat all day long, you know, because he'll sit back and just sing, or he'll just sit back and play banjo and sing for a little bit. And it's actually really worked live so far, and it's awesome. I'm into it.
Sorry, final thing just about Wildcard is the other thing I think we had to be confident about is putting it first on the album. I think that was a little bit of a leap, and I'm very happy we did it. I love the tone it sets. It's also the first line of the song is the title of the album. There's always a story.
Does a song like The Sailor in the Sea get made if you don't have the confidence that you have apparently achieved in Wildcard and Coyote and Silent Lonely Drifter in terms of the lushness of the production? It's so layered. The driving rhythm section, we mentioned already your guitar work and the guitar solo. It's very non-Midnight North or very non-Under the Lights Midnight North. But does that song even get made if not for those three songs that are closer to the original vibe?
I think The Sailor in the Sea is a little more like our live or what we had been going for live with some of the past, you know, songs and albums. You know, it is a little more live rocker, but we're just adding the groove, which Connor was such a big part of creating that, and I'm sure he can talk about, you know, the underlying rhythms and grooves and setting that. But I mean, this one's also a confidence to step back for me, because I'm not actually playing most of that guitar. That's our friend Marcus Machado on the lead guitar, and Connor playing a lot of those riffs that mimic the bass line. So Connor on guitar, and I'm sort of just chunking on the rhythm guitar.
I think that's, honestly, that's, I mean, I don't know, if you want to like compare it to old Midnight North stuff, I would compare it to something off of Scarlet Skies, because when we did that, that's our second record, we were just layering the crap out of everything, and we were just doing guitars, and there's synthesizers that you don't even know are synthesizers on some of the Scarlet Skies stuff. So, I mean, yeah, it definitely gets made, like, even regardless of the acoustic sounds. I think it was bold to put it second right after Wild Card, you know, and we talked about that, a large juxtaposition between, like, first track, second track.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, you know, it's a funk tune, it's funky, it's kind of trippy at times. You know, there's a large key change. So it's definitely like a daring song. And yeah, I mean, it started off, you know, Graham kind of wrote something, his groove, but then we kind of stripped that back, like what he did.
Yeah, I had the song written, you know, sort of like a strummy, folky acoustic guitar thing. And Connor basically just like built the groove around that framework for it. And yeah, we got in the studio and we were cutting parts and doing all, you know, all this stuff to sort of sculpt it into what it is.
It sort of has a Fleetwood Mac vibe to it. That's what I got anyway. And I don't know if that's the vocal or the arrangement, but it kind of does have that, in my opinion anyway, that Fleetwood Mac vibe to it.
If like Funkadelic was playing a Fleetwood Mac song.
Yeah.
I think is what we're going for.
I don't know. I mean, I guess because there's a male and a female vocal, but
maybe that's the only reason.
I think the melody
I could see.
Yeah.
But it's very like Funkadelic or Prince, I would say, is what we're going for. And, you know, a lot of that is the way the rhythm section kind of was approached. It's actually like we started with a drum loop, believe it or not, and you can kind of and that I programmed. And then we had Nathan play the drums more or less exactly like the drum loop. And then we kind of went back and forth with Dave, our producer, like it kind of had a very live feel at first. And the more we listened to the mixes, and even Nathan agreed that he's like, we need to really just like loop these drums like as much as possible. Yeah. So it kind of has that, and then it's very riff based, you know, or at least it came out to be very riff based. And then there's all the kind of funky guitar and the funky synthesizers, which just kind of take it to another world.
Yeah, at the back end, the back end with the synths. Good Days, Elliot's vocals are just outstanding again. I mean, I know she's obviously, you know, there's four of you. She's a key member of the band, but do you ever sit and think, wow, how lucky are we to have a woman like Elliot and a voice like Elliot in this band? I mean, it's just outstanding. And in Good Days, I mean, it really shines through, I think.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I can think back to I've known Elliot for a really long time. And the first time I've ever played music with her, I remember my friend was like, she's gold. And I mean, that was like 20 years ago or something, you know, way before Midnight North. So yeah, she's, I mean, she's always had a very powerful voice and a powerful presence. And I mean, we absolutely do not take it for granted.
Yeah.
Yeah. No kidding. And that's just such a, that song is, I mean, she brought us that chorus, or she sent us that chorus at some point, and, you know, we all sort of like added to it, but everything is sort of structured around that melody. And then her, you know, execution of that melody just is like, yeah, just really that is what the song's about. And, you know, there's lots of cool production and instrumental flourishes around that, but it's all, you know, pointed towards, her singing those melodies for sure.
We briefly mentioned Earthquakes off the top because of the horns, but this is, by the way, this track could easily fit on Selections from the Great American Music Hall, obviously, because of the horns, but there's a ton of swagger, and you guys don't exhibit a ton of swagger necessarily. Like, Graham, I don't see you as a guy who has a ton of swagger on stage, although, yeah, and I have seen you live, and there's not a ton of that, but on Earthquakes, there seems to be a lot of, you know, this swagger and R&B soul vibes. And again, the playing has come a long way for all of you on this track. Is it cool that you can introduce a song like Earthquakes that's such a departure from the rest?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Earthquakes is, I mean, it's kind of similar to, I mean, at least in terms of track order, to Sailor in the Sea. You know, it's like something a little more acoustic, and then we funk it up a little bit more.
Yeah.
Earthquakes, we've been playing for, that's the one we actually have been playing live for a few years now. I think we brought it up in 2018 or so. And yeah, it's just always, I mean, I think that's right around when we were putting out Selections, the live album where we had the horn section. And so, you know, we had horns on Under the Lights. It's on Playing a Poor Hand Well. It's on Every Day.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when we were initially sort of, Elliot and I were sort of writing some tunes for what would eventually become this new album, the first set of ideas, I think, were very horn-based. And this is the one that's survived through to actually make the album, I think. And, you know, it really works. And it's just a song that we can throw down at any time. And just having the horns. I mean, I think we maybe played it with horns live once, Connor. Maybe with Michael Bello or
yeah,
someone like that. It was different horns. It was a different part. But sort of
maybe on 420.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. That Mystic show. But yeah, just like in my head, that song has always had horns and been like sort of a funky R&B song. And yeah. Pulled it off.
You mentioned writing with Elliot. Even now that Nathan's in the band, and obviously Connor plays a large part in the songwriting, does it still start with you and Elliot together, or you and Elliot apart, and then you and Elliot? How do these songs come to fruition in terms of the songwriting and everything else that takes place before you hit the studio?
I think this album, it's been more collaborative. The songs have started from all of us. You know, there's songs that are entirely me or Elliot or Nathan, or I mean, songs that at least have started, Connor, with you writing, like, we'll get to We're Not Alone, but that was like Connor had a whole track basically written, and I threw lyrics on top of it basically. But yeah, I mean, you know, we all sort of start writing these parts and then take them to the band in various stages of doneness, and then, you know, the band either finishes the songwriting or finishes the arrangement or finishes, you know, the layering in the studio. But yeah, I mean, Earthquakes, I basically wrote through and then brought it to the band, but something like Good Days that we just talked about, you know, Elliot sent a chorus and then I wrote some verses and then Elliot edited those verses. And then Nathan and I wrote these riffs and then, you know, the whole band has to work it up themselves. And it sort of changes song to song how it comes through, and they can start from anyone.
Yeah, there's not a single like pathway.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, it's kind of always been like that, aside from maybe the first record, but like, especially as we've spent more time together and we've been doing this full time, it just, it starts usually with an idea from someone, obviously, but then it could go in so many different directions depending on, you know, who's hanging out with who or who heard the first thing first, you know. Yeah. It's very, there's a lot of pathways.
Right.
Yeah. Or just like when the original writer gets stuck in the process, you know, and like needs help. And then it's like who's around.
Giveaway the Ghost is another one of these acoustic songs, but it's so lush and layered. Again, that's just taking more time in the studio to get it right. I mean, that's what it is, right? It's take after take and adding things or taking away things. But at the end result is a very lush and layered tune that people will be at least sonically familiar with when they hear it for the first time.
Yeah, that one Elliot wrote, I guess a little while ago. We had demoed it at some point, I think in the summer of 2019. The fun thing with this one is we added the bridge at the end of the process. It was like close to mixed, and Elliot wrote this other part that, you know, finished the story. And so we were able to, or Dave, producer, was able to fit that all through. This is another one for me personally where all the electric guitar riffs, which aren't really lead guitar, but they're lead guitar, but it's not like a solo. They're riffs. That was something that came out of me having extra time to spend during the lockdowns, just being at home, and was very helpful, I think, for the direction of the song.
We already talked about Coyote. I don't have any notes on Stars Feeling, actually, which is weird. But let's skip ahead.
Stars Falling. That's another one for me where I... actually, that was Connor, you and me and Dave being like, we're not sure about the the rhythm guitar for that I had tracked in the studio, and so I added it at home. Also
your great MIDI programming.
My synth playing. I played.
We're gonna call it MIDI programming.
Computer. Yes, I did MIDI. The synthesizers parts on that. Yeah.
We were like, we need to add synthesizer like pads, like very like uplifting pads. And he was like, well, should I just play a synth? And I'm just like, just give me the MIDI notes. And so he did the MIDI notes.
Like
and
on
a
my
MIDI file is like very small, email it to me or whatever. And then I, you know, all I do is just like play with, I have a million synthesizers and just layer upon layer, but it was kind of funny because it was just MIDI programming.
Nerd alert. I literally played it like a keyboard, but a computer keyboard, you know?
Yeah.
Like pressing the notes. Sent that. Yeah. But that's another older song for me that I wrote a while ago that I think Elliot and I had done acoustic a bunch like a few years back, and then finally brought to the band. We'd performed it sporadically, but at some point we sort of like, it's kind of just, you know, power ballady kind of song, but we locked into a groove for it Nathan and Connor specifically, that really opened it up, at least for me, made it trackable.
Without putting my foot in my mouth like I did for The Sailor in the Sea with the guitar parts, is that you, Graham, with the big solo open on Mississippi River, or is it somebody else?
Yeah, that's all me.
Okay, good.
On Mississippi River. And this is the one I was really talking about with being able to sit at home and listen to this stuff. Because we hadn't really tracked a lot of electric guitar for that song. That was one of the ones, one of the few things we hadn't got to before the pandemic hit. So I was able to sort of come up with all these parts, really like bumping the energy up for Mississippi River. And yeah, then I think I just sent them kind of like those MIDI files. I sent them to Dave, the producer, and he ran them through an amp and tracked it that way. So it was very pandemic recording.
There are a lot of subtle licks and fills throughout, and I guess that's also all you with those guitar
parts.
That's
what I'm talking about. Yeah,
yeah,
that's amazing. Throughout the whole song.
Yeah,
yeah, all that stuff.
Who's is that violin? Who's playing violin on that? And then there's a couple other places where I think violin shows up. I think is that Crosby or
I
is
don't
it
think
some,
there's any violin.
No
on,
violin
on Mississippi River, but if there's violin, it's Jason Crosby.
Figured, yeah.
If there's violin or keyboards, that's Jason Crosby.
Silent Lonely Drifter is a cool song, but it's also a cool story because Nathan, the story is that Nathan would play parts of it for you on the road, and then eventually he showed you the full song, Graham. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think he would just be, I mean, whenever he would have a banjo, he would sort of just like pick some of the stuff he would be working on, these little folky songs he's got. And we wrote that song Longview together, which was a similar process. And since that we put out as a single back in 2019. And, you know, basically since then, I've just like, you have to like show me these things, you know, these compositions, these things you're coming up with, these songs. And so he finally did. And actually, I think he showed it to me around the same time we were coming up with the intros to Good Days, that riff. And just playing on an acoustic guitar and a banjo, I think at Jake's house, Connor, at Southern Falls. And yeah, he showed it to me, and you know, that song was written. It was done, Silent Lonely Drifter, I mean. And so the one thing we changed is I had just joined a band called, at the time, Sisters of the Strawberry Moon. And so I learned about all the different moons. That band had been named after the full moon at the time that they had been recording an album. That's with Luther Dickinson and Amy Helm and the Birds of Chicago.
I had Luther on to talk about
Chicago,
that record.
Both JT and Allie. Yep. Yep. When they were touring on that, they I joined that band. It's now called Capital Sunrays. But, you know, Allie Russell, who's on this record, she's singing on Coyote and Sailor in the Sea, singing harmonies. She was telling me about, you know, they had named it after the Strawberry Moon, the full moon in June, which has been when they were recording that album. And so I was like, Nathan, like each of these songs, it's not just the bright September moon, which is what all the choruses had ended with, but we should like look at each verse and pick a full moon from the list. So the freight train leaving Texas line is from, you know, we figured the Big Hunter's moon would be the best one. And then the last line, the seaside vacation, that happens in June, we decided. So that's the Strawberry Moon. Yeah. So that was my only little addition. And then, yeah, we kind of just learned in the studio. Nathan showed us and we made him sing and it was great.
You made him sing, but those harmonies with you and Elliot around him are incredible.
Yeah, thanks. That's at this point, I feel like Elliot and I can kind of sing with anyone. You know, we've been the second and third harmonies for all kinds of different bands at this point. And the two of us have sang so together so much. And so when we hear a strong a strong melody like Nathan had, that wonderful folky melody that Silent Lonely Drifter has. It was pretty easy for us to sort of pretty easy for us to get our parts together.
We're Not Alone closes the album, and you already mentioned that Connor had a lot to do with that song. Connor, why are you so dark, man? Like, what? Why does the song have to? Why does the record have to end with such a dark presentation?
You don't even want to know what the inspiration was. It's really bad. Yeah, it is dark. I mean, originally, there's a Violent Femmes song called "Country Death Song." It's like about, it's about like losing a daughter. It's tough, but that was kind of sort of the inspiration for the vibe. Once Graham, like I wrote a progression with like a full band. I do a lot of other work, and it was just like a random track that I had from another project that was sort of left over. And so I had this demo of a full band playing kind of the same chords, but then we changed the key once Graham wrote the lyrics. Uh-huh. And when I kind of heard his lyrics, honestly, that's what I thought was dark. I guess the chords. But then I my friend had played, I was jamming with a friend and he showed me this Violent Femmes song. And I was like, man, this reminds me of kind of what we're working on in Midnight North. And so I was definitely like, you know, this kind of like, it's a little more rockabilly maybe and more up-tempo than the Violent Femmes tune, yeah. But it definitely has that kind of like this country vibe that is very ominous.
it felt for me on the first spin, like almost like a Widespread Panic song. Like,
oh,
a very okay. Kind of, I don't know if it's the melody. I'm not, you know, smart enough to know if it's the melody or the instrumentation, but those first couple of riffs right at the beginning for me, which is consistent with what you're saying. I mean, they are, you know, a country rock band. So it's consistent with that, but that's what I thought of when I first put pen to paper here. It says WSP.
My hope for the song, which I think we pulled off, was sort of like punk rock bluegrass. Yeah. And those were sort of my catchphrases for it. I just like Connor's original chords and the demo he made for that other project he was talking about. It was, you know, it was in a different key that didn't have quite as ominous a feeling. It was a little slower, and I was just picking it on guitar, trying to like learn it, wrap my mind around it. And the melody came, and it really worked in this one key. And yeah, the lyrics kind of just came from that. And for me, they're sort of one of those sets of lyrics that like was written pre-pandemic, but then I like started feeling all like it sort of like it meant more post pandemic than it did before, you know. It definitely had a vibe from the second that like I, you know, the lyrics and melody came out, and that vibe was like punk bluegrass. And I wanted us to put our sort of spin on it, and Connor's spin on it especially. So I wanted that, you know, it's got that like driving two-step with the distorted drums, especially in the intros. But then the melody for the intros is like a combination between the slide guitar and the slide guitar riff that I came up with, and the synth, sort of softer synth notes in the background that's like a counter melody to that. It really, really came together. It's one of the most fun songs for us to play live too. We've been closing the show with it a lot of times the last month or so.
I'm glad that you mentioned the last month or so, and earlier on you mentioned playing a bunch of gigs. How was it getting back on the road? Was it amazing? Was it tough at the beginning to get used to things? I mean, talk me through being back on the road and touring after such a long hiatus.
I mean, it was a little, we played some shows at Terrapin, which were outdoors and very socially distanced, and those felt great to like get back on stage, you know, but it was easy and there was not, you know, it felt very safe. And like, then we hit the road and we went to Nashville and they were like, we're moving you indoors. And it sold out and, you know, mask. I mean, we were all vaccinated, so we were like cool with going out on the road, but we definitely, you know, booked it during COVID and we're like, okay, most of these are outdoors. If they're indoors, it's super limited capacity. By the time we got out there, everything changed. And that first night was a little intense in Nashville. We opened this venue called Exit Inn, which has been around, I think, since the 70s. And I mean, it wasn't full capacity, but it was like, I don't know what, there was like 350 or 400 people in like a kind of small club.
Yeah,
it was a little intense at first. I got to say that first night was kind of wild.
It was June 2nd. So, you know, very much us Bay Area folks being like, whoa, things are different in Tennessee. It's just also just crazy being back on the road. You know, we get used to it touring a lot, like in 2018, 19.
Yeah.
And you know, there's some skills you develop, some habits, that you develop that, you know, help you sleep and rest and, you know, eat well and do all that stuff that keeps you sane on the road, that we're just out of practice with. Right. And that part was hard too, honestly, kind of getting back into the rhythm of it. You know, we just got home yesterday from our last leg of it, and I'm feeling pretty good about what we pulled off this summer and spring. So and it, like, the music has been amazing, honestly. It's been so good to play with these other three and sometimes four folks, and it's so amazing to play live music again. It really is.
I know you play with Dad a lot, with Phil a lot, but is it weird when he shows up at a couple of dates on the East Coast to play with your band, not like the Terrapin family band or, you know, any other incarnation? I think he's played with you guys before, but it's different when Phil shows up and plays with Midnight North and Connor can take a back seat to a certain degree.
Connor can rock some electric guitar or mandolin.
Or piano. Or keyboards. That was the other thing about that Nashville show. I was like, we're getting back into it. There's all these people inside. Not all of them have masks. And I have to play five instruments. My head is spinning. I wouldn't call it weird. It's fun.
You crushed it though.
It definitely.
Yeah, it's great.
You know, we knew that Phil was coming, you know, I found out a little like 2 weeks before and I was like, oh my God, I got to practice my mandolin and I got to practice a little piano for Green County. And I got to practice guitar on, you know, something like San Francisco Rain and some other songs. I was like, let's get this going. And we didn't announce, you know, we didn't even say there was a special guest. We didn't say anything. So, you know, I think obviously the buzz got around after the first show or two and, you know, but I wouldn't call it weird. It's pretty fun. And, you know, it's hilarious. I can remember specifically some people in the front row in Nashville just losing it, you know, like start screaming because they had no idea. So I wouldn't call it weird. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great. And, you know, like my folks just wanted to get out and see the country and get out of town for a little bit. They, you know, they've been stuck at their house for a while at this point. So, you know, they were all vaxxed and wanted to have some fun with Midnight North, which it's honestly just awesome for me that they they like the band. And I mean, I think it's awesome for all of us, but you know, our families are all very supportive, and that's this is just sort of an outgrowth of that, you know? And so, yeah, I'm stoked my dad wants to play our songs. Yeah,
it's cool, right? I guess it's good too that dad's feeling like there were some dates that you had to cancel because of the pandemic or because he wasn't feeling great. But he's feeling great now and everything's.
Yeah, he hurt his back in summer of 2019 and had to cancel some stuff. But then he was coming back and was ready to rock for the pandemic before the pandemic hit. So, I mean, I think it's the same for all of us, right? Like, we had to stop and sit and practice and, you know, get ready to really hit it once we were able to do these again. You know, I think it's like anything else. He's very excited to be playing live music again too, you know?
Yeah. And the Terrapin Family Band shows have been awesome. I've been not watching them live, but, Doug Clifton takes some shots and I'm friends with him on Facebook and whatever else. So
our buddy Doug.
Yeah. So I see you guys and I'm like, I gotta get out there and eventually one day I will. How's the audience taken to the new tunes? Have you played a lot of them on the road? I mean, some of them you've been playing for years, but are they into the new tunes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, Earthquakes is really the only one that we were playing. And I think it got even better after we recorded the record. Like, as far as Earthquakes goes, we added a cool jam section that really, you know, opens up. And, like, I get feedback from the crowd when that part starts. So I think Earthquakes got even better. Yeah. And then, you know, Not Alone, it's a barn burner, you know, people, that's something that people are instantly gonna like move to. The
Sailor in the Sea's gone over really well.
I mean, those are the obvious ones, and then there's the acoustic ones, which we've definitely, like, we're kind of changing the format that we've done. And so there's been times where, you know, we ask the crowd to, like, all right, we're going to play like a stripped down soft song, you know, so, you know, be quiet. And for the most part, it works. And that's something that we haven't done a lot of. And depending on the venue, if it's indoors, we've done a one mic situation over the last couple months. And that's also worked. I feel like when you pull that one mic out and everyone comes to the front of the stage, the audience kind of quiets down.
Yeah, they perk up and quiet down. Yeah,
outdoors playing some of that stuff, you know, it works, but it's not as striking as doing the one mic. So yeah, it's definitely like people love the new tunes.
Yeah, we play 70-80% of the new record each show. It's been great.
The plan is to continue to tour. I mean, you're back home now, but is the plan to get out there again and do some more touring over the next couple months, especially since the record?
Yeah, we'll hit it pretty good.
Starting in September, I guess, right?
We've got a lot of unannounced stuff. We're taking a breather here over the next couple months. We are doing in September, we're playing in California, and we've probably got a couple things that aren't announced. And then we've got some stuff in the fall that's not announced, but very soon we will be hitting it again. But yeah, we are taking a little bit of a break here for the next 2 months.
Of course, that could mean that you'll show up at Terrapin Crossroads at any time and just decide to play, right?
At any time. When is
that might happen?
Our buddies, the infamous String Dusters, our record label mates are playing this weekend at Terrapin. So I think you can bet on seeing some of us then.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
They, I always tease them because I think the last time they played there, they had worked up a whole bunch of dead tunes. And I was teasing Falco and Pandolfi about playing dead tunes with Phil. And they were like, oh yeah, well, we spent a lot of time and they're great guys. That's great. That's a great situation that you guys will be playing with them. They're great.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, we're very lucky to be on their record label too, on Americana Vibes. And we trust what the Dusters do. They are a wonderful people and organization. And so we take cues from them, often. You know, you sort of find the people who, I don't know, I do at least, where it's like, oh, if Luther Dickinson tells me to do something, I should do it, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, you should play bass in this band. I'm like, okay. And the Dusters are more people like that. You know, we trust their opinion on things. And if they like what we're doing, then, you know, we feel That's good great. About what we're doing. You know, they're some of those folks.
I can't wait to hear some of that stuff, too. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a while since we chatted, but I'm glad we caught up. Thanks so much for taking the time. And Connor, great to meet you this way. And continued success. You've definitely got us in your corner, and we love all the music you put out, and that's why I bug you right away, Graham, when something new comes out, because I want to hear it as quickly as possible. So thank you for being accessible and for sharing and for making great music. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much. July 23rd, There's Always a Story, comes out in a couple of weeks.
For more on Midnight North, including tour dates and information on There's Always a Story, visit midnightnorth.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to my favorite track off the new record due out July 23rd on Americana Vibes. Here is Coyote.
Of your failures are now done. was the last time you'd sell them your soul?
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.